And now, you don't have to wait for Sunday to hear what the Catman has to say about your city.
Can you hear me?
In your life. It's Cats at Night with your host, the man who is New York, John Catsimatidis.
Well, at least stay indoors where the food is. So that's what we're going to be dealing with. Turn that button on right there, John. The on button. There we go. I think that will finally get us. Now we're on the air on AM 970, The Answer. And we were just saying it's going to rain all day tomorrow, so it's a good reason to stay indoors and eat more turkey.
Rain.
Hey, breaking news within the last hour. The president has announced a full and complete pardon for General Mike Flynn, who I think, as everybody got to know the story, was totally railroaded in that pre-Russia collusion days. Your reaction to this breaking story tonight?
I think he's entitled to a full pardon because it's crazy what's going on in Washington.
No, I actually agree with that. But what we would like to see is not just justice in one instance, but let's get it across the board. Today, a Nevada court saying that Giuliani and team will get an evidentiary hearing, probably early next week, somewhere around the 3rd. They're going to be able to present as many as 15 witnesses in that court proceeding as to what happened in Nevada and people claiming that their votes were disallowed and not counted.
Well, we got in this hour, I think about 5:30, I think Kimberly Guilfoyle is going to be calling in. And I'm going to ask Kimberly, give us an update. What the heck is going on?
Yeah. Where is she on the ground at right now?
She's in Long Island, but on her way to the White House, I think, for a Thanksgiving dinner.
Okay. Well, that would make sense, the family stuff. You know, the team is spread out so far. The mayor, Giuliani, was in Pennsylvania today and met with the, if I understand the group right, the Republican Senate Committee. But there's a possibility that the Trump team will now get to probably go to at least four, maybe all six swing states to present to the legislatures their case for voter fraud in those areas.
Well, we have to get down to what the heck.
We need to find out the truth. Yeah.
I understand Randy Mastro is calling in. Randy, are you there?
I am, John. Nice to be with you again.
Now, you're the West Sider that lives on the East Side that's involved in all these hotel deals over there. Are the people in or out? Are the West Side liberal Democrats happy yet? What's going on?
John, they are out of the Lucerne. Today, a judge, a New York State Supreme Court judge, closed the door on legal challenges. And ruled that the city has a right to move that population out of the Lucerne, an SRO hotel, move them downtown to a better, safer, proper shelter facility, and that will happen next week.
Well, that's, I'm sure the West Siders are involved. Now, you represent, tell us about the organization you represent up there.
Yeah. So, John, I represent an organization, West Side Community Organization, also known as WESCO. And these are concerned Upper West Siders. They were concerned not only about what was happening to their neighborhood, and unspeakable horrors have been happening to their neighborhood, but they're also concerned that this is a vulnerable population in that SRO hotel, supposed to be temporary. They can't get the housing doubled up in single rooms. The social services and medical services, they had to be bused downtown to get medical and addiction counseling. No recreational areas in that hotel, so they spilled out into the streets. They cared about that population, too. So they went to the city, had me go to the city and say, hey, these SRO hotels aren't working. They're temporary. These guys need to be moved into a proper shelter facility. And the city agreed to do it. This is one of those only in New York City stories, John. You've heard them before. Something that's obviously so right that should happen, something obviously so good for these men who, you know, shouldn't have been housed for any duration in an SRO hotel, okay, finally getting into a proper, safer shelter. Groups come up and start challenging to try and force the city to keep them in the Upper West Side SRO hotel. Crazy. But today, a judge shut that down and said, hey, city, you have the right to move these guys. And in fact, they're being moved to a better, safer, proper shelter, which is a win-win for everyone.
Randy, it's Kevin McCullough. The issue here, as it has gone back and forth when you've been on the show in recent weeks, was always that you thought you had secured, you know, a certain agreement, et cetera, and then the mayor and the city would come back and have a counter move. Are they effectively out of counter moves at this point?
It's Kevin, it's not so much counter moves by the city. The city was attempting. Look, the mayor went to this Upper West Side neighborhood, went to Lucerne, and saw with his own eyes in early September what was going on there. And he said publicly, this is not acceptable. His words, not acceptable. So he agreed to move the men then. And we applauded him for that, said that was the right thing. But yeah, then there were a series of miscues by the city. They didn't get it done. They tried to, you know, move the men to one place, something called the Harmony, which was an adult shelter. There were protests about that. And finally the city said, hey, there's this wonderful facility we've been using for quarantining people in COVID. There's plans, you know, potentially to convert it into a permanent shelter. Lots of recreation space. Every one of the men could have their own room, and the social and medical services would be right on site. We're going to move them there. This should have been a no-brainer. And what happens? The downtown folks form an organization to try and block it, and some folks, overzealous on the Upper West Side, you know, form a different group that called Open Hearts that's trying to keep the men at the Lucerne. And both those groups, the downtown group and, you know, these folks on the Upper West Side, you know, on behalf of three of the men at the Lucerne, filed lawsuits to try and block the move. It took a couple of weeks to sort out, but the judge ruled definitively, no, not going to block the city from making the move. And now the city has the go-ahead. So
all right,
the right thing will be done. Justice delayed but not denied.
Well, Randy Marshall, thank you for bringing us up to date. And have a happy Thanksgiving and enjoy the turkey. And we'll catch up with you in December.
Thank you, John. Best to Margo. Thank you, Kevin. A pleasure to be with you as always.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good guy, and that sounds like a good outcome for the people that are involved in that.
Kevin, there's so many problems in the city. Every time you turn around, there's a problem. There's a problem in real estate. There's a problem in commercial commercial tenants. And I mean, where the heck we go? I mean, it seems like New York City. We got to get lucky, and God has to look over us.
Well, I think that we need new leadership, obviously, across the board. We were speaking before with your friend Peter King and the longtime congressman, heroic congressman from Long Island, and also Stephen Moore. And, John, all of us that were in this conversation, except you, spoke up and said, we need someone like you, if not you, John, you,
yeah,
to run for mayor. But whether you choose to or not, that's one thing, but the slate is pretty clear. We need a problem solver that's going to come in, prioritize the liabilities, and begin to eliminate them one by one. And you've got to start with safety. Public safety is where it all starts.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You know, it comes down to the do you want safe streets? Or do you want just crime on your streets?
Well, nothing else is going to come back until the crime is dealt with. So that's going to be the challenge. Hey, joining us now is Peter Vallone, who is part of the Civilian Complaint Review Board and wants to help us understand what's going on in our city. And he's back with us. Say good evening to him.
Peter, how are you today?
Thank you very much, Ben. What you just said is from you to God's ears. Because as you recall, when we championed, David Dinkins and myself and Richard Weinberg, my counsel, who's soon to get on, we championed Safe Streets, Safe City. The argument was, and still is, You can't have good schools. You can't have good transportation. You can't have good anything unless you have safety.
Yeah.
And unless the people feel secure and safe. And that's the argument that cannot be ignored anymore. Because, unfortunately, the way it turns out, back in the 80s when there were riots and was everything going on badly, and, of course, that's when we came up with the Civilian Complaint Review Board, which solved a lot of problems. But before we get to that, it was absolutely outrageous what was going on in the 80s. And unfortunately, if you're under 50 years of age, you have no idea of what it was like before we made the streets safe again. Starting to cut the cops again is cutting your throat, and you're to bleed to death unless you restore them. And no one seems to understand that, and I can understand it if I was under 50 years of age. And if I was born into a relatively decent environment where things are safe, and you have people arguing in Congress, Republicans and Democrats, forgetting that they're loyal to the country and not to the party, I would be very upset if I was 35 or 40 years old and a new council member. So I can understand that. But somewhere along, Richard, are you on?
Yeah, Judge has just joined us.
We're on.
Judge Weinberg, welcome to Cats at Night.
Now, the other big thing is that they want to change around the Civilian Review Board that you started back in the 80s or 90s?
93.
We passed it in 1993. It was passed by the City Council.
And it was a very tough time. And we're talking about unsafe streets again, Richard. Where are we going to? But at that particular time, in the 16 years that I had the privilege of serving second most powerful person in the city of New York, second only to the mayor, and working with three different mayors, or four different mayors, actually, and getting along with every one of them, although they were very much different in temperament and everything else. At that time, David Dinkins was the mayor, the gentleman of all gentlemen. But the first time that I ever saw him lose his temper is when we were having a riot, a so-called police riot, near the steps of City Hall and on the steps of City Hall, with Rudy Giuliani, who at that time I did not know, only as a U.S. attorney, but we later became very good friends after he was elected. However, at the time, Rudy was lampooning the mayor and everything else to do with the fact that the streets were not safe and it was all the mayor's fault and the whole thing. And I had this council members, I had this hearing we came up with, Richard and I came up with a few others, what we call the Civilian Complaint Review Board, but a different kind of review board, a review board that had not only cops involved with it, but also civilians involved with it, and also a civilian chosen by each borough council delegation. We had 13 on it. Richard, it was an ingenious idea, and I wanted to thank you for coming up with that with me together, because that's what saved the city. I had an angry mayor inside, David Dinkins. I had an angry would-be mayor who shortly became mayor on the outside, and we had minority council members standing up yelling that we have to do something about that. And believe it or not, God came down to the city council, and we did it. We came up with a Civilian Complaint Review Board that everybody admired, except a few malcontents who always are against everything, and it worked well. Now, however, we have well-meaning people, I don't know how old they are, but if they're older than 50, they should know better, they're saying, do away with this kind of board. Let's have an elected official. Let's not have experts that serve on this board. And I think that's absurd. Don't you think so, Richard?
I think it's a very, very dangerous idea. The whole history of the Civilian Complaint Review Board started during the Lindsay administration, and the cops were very alienated by it. That we were able to pass this legislation in 93 is very important. If this goes to a vote to make this a charter referendum, you're going to divide the city in half between half the people who are scared to death because of what's going on, because the epidemic of crime that's happening right now.
I just want to let everybody know who's on the phone with us. We have Peter Vallone, who is the former Speaker of the City Council, and his counsel, Judge Richard Weinberg. And
who was responsible for so many reforms in the city, particularly this one, which I so admire him for. Because, as you know, there is a movement on now, apparently by well-meaning people, who forgot all about how unsafe this city was, who I want to now have, forget about the civilian review board, having the police involved with it, having experts from every borough involved in it, having professional people who know about safe cities, safe streets on the community honor board, and they want to let it, just have it elected. Put it on, do away with the Charter Commission, say, forget this. We don't want elected officials on. We don't want police on it. We don't want each borough, each council borough delegation to pick someone from their own borough to serve on the board so that you have accountability to the city council, which must be some an area which is closest to all of the police. I don't know what it's like to have an unsafe borough or a council district with 150,000 or 170,000 people in it. So it's a ridiculous idea, again, by well-meaning people. What do you think about that, Richard?
I think we already have an existing independent civilian complaint review board. It has vast investigative powers. It has subpoena powers. It has a mandatory budget. It has 15 members now with the change that was made last year in the charter revision. You have 15 members, five appointed by the council, five appointed by the mayor, three recommended by the police commissioner, one appointed both by the speaker of the council and the mayor, and one by the public advocate. You already have an organization in place. You have an organization in place that exists now. If you have an elected position, you're going to politicize this, and you're going to have people making rules and supervising police, which is going to be a disincentive for effective law enforcement. The cops are going to be alienated. They're already retiring in big numbers. It's hard to fill up a class. And what's going to happen is they're not going to do what they have to do. They will look the other way because they don't want to be dragged before a kangaroo court of elected political opportunists.
The real fear of this, incidentally, Richard, is that you have these, again, people who believe that the police should be defunded, that they can handle this by themselves. We don't need police. I mean, this is the most insane idea I have ever heard of in all the years I've been in all the 86 years that I've been involved in public service of one kind or another. It's absolutely incredible that you could even believe this, that let's get rid of the police. And you're about to have somebody like this elected to the so-called new civilian complaint review board, which would be a disaster, a total disaster.
And remember this too, what's going on across the country. You have a lot of left-wing money coming in, running candidates to positions of DA.
Right.
We have no law enforcement by prosecutors now. You go into Philadelphia, you go into San Francisco, you go into St. Louis. And that's what you have to worry about because you have Chicago. You have prosecutors who are not doing their jobs, and you're not with an elected civilian complaint review board, you're going to have cops who are going to walk off the job. If they're still on the job, they will look the other way.
We've got our own challenges in that regard here in New York because, you know, that's been some of the frustrations over the last year that you just can't get DA Vance to advance some of these cases that should be bringing to trial. Gentlemen, let me ask you this. We lost Mayor Dinkins yesterday, and New Yorkers knew him as in some ways a larger-than-life character. You know, as someone who wasn't raised in New York and came here as a young adult, there's always kind of a different way of speaking about the Dinkins era, but I talked with our mutual friend David Patterson yesterday, and he said, you know, when the mayor was in office, he actually saw some of the reductions in crime that oftentimes are only attributed to his successor, and that in fact his relationship with Giuliani was warmer than a lot of people realized. I'm just curious if either of you had any insight on those levels.
Absolutely, I worked very closely with both of them. Right now, David. We were never been able to get it through the way we did get it through without the support of the minority caucus in Albany. Because with the new independent council, when we got rid of the Board of Estrin, when we argued that case in the Supreme Court, now it was up to the council. And we had sole authority when it came to the real estate tax with a little nudge from the state, which we could have worked on. And I was prepared to raise the real estate tax, but I wanted to, and I tried, and I did convince David Dinkins to come with me to Albany, because we had to get the minority caucus to stop this nonsense about
right.
making the cops the enemies. The cops were not the enemies. We have a lot of minority cops, and the crimes that were mostly in need of help
yeah.
were the minority districts. So he went along with it. He came to Albany with me. We got the dinner. We got it through. We had a small real estate tax and a small personal income tax, and we hired 6,000 new cops. Now, when Rudy Giuliani came on board, right, after this riot that we were just talking about with this Vinnie Commission.
Gentlemen, on that note, I'm sorry to do this to you, Speaker Vallone, but we've got to take this break. It's Katz at Night. We've got a lot of moving parts here. Coming right back with John Katzenmatidis live on 77 WABC, AM 970 The Answer, and 107.1 FM WLIR. Coming right back, Katz at Night, right here.
Because a cat's the only cat who knows where it's at.
We now return to Cats at Night with John Katzenmatidis.
Cause everybody digs a swinging cat.
All right, the Cats at Night broadcast. Kevin McCullough, John Katzenmatidis in the studio. And just before airtime tonight, checking in from the very busy trail of Team Trump, Kimberly Guilfoyle and John Katzenmatidis sat down. We'd like you to hear that conversation right now.
Well, now we have with us Kimberly Guilfoyle. And let's find out. All my friends are asking me and asking everybody, where are we? Kimberly, good morning or good evening now. How are you today?
Fantastic. Great to be with you on the program and wishing everyone a wonderful weekend with their families. God bless. You know, hopefully in many of these states, people are still able to be with their family members and celebrate and enjoy. It's rough going out there and crazy, depending on what state you live in.
Yeah, it's Thanksgiving tomorrow, and, you know, we wish everybody a happy and a healthy one. And but all my friends, no matter where I go, are asking me, they're calling me, they're emailing me, they're texting me, where are we? So you are the person that's the closest to the campaign and the closest to the powers that be in Washington. Can you give all Americans, where are we?
You know, it's a great question. I mean, I'll tell you what. The true believers and the fighters are still hanging in there for the American people, and so is the president. This isn't something where we should give up and just say, okay, it seems like they're getting away with it and throw in the towel. That's not how I am. That's not how you or your family are. That's not how the Trumps are. And it's too important for all the law-abiding Americans that actually went and cast a legal vote. You know, shame on people who want to dilute those votes, disenfranchise with fraudulent votes. This is a very simple process. It's very obvious what needs to happen here is that all legal and valid votes need to be counted, and only then should the election then be certified in these respective states after you toss out any illegal, fraudulent, or invalid votes and ballots. And that's the thing. You see Rudy Giuliani, a great American, fighting very hard on behalf of the president, on behalf of the country, to be able to maintain the integrity of our voting system. It's just, it's shocking. You see some things that have been documented in affidavits. Why didn't they let poll watchers, you know, watch and supervise? Why is it one person pretend, you know, ballot counting tables? It just makes no sense. And then I'm very concerned about the Dominion, you know, voting machines and the software there. And, you know, I don't think when the Dominion spokesperson went on that he was very transparent or honest about what's gone on there and how those machines are vulnerable and can be corrupted with fraud. You know, this is insane to me that we are still, like, in this country dealing with this situation. And not only that, we actually have, you know, the ability here in this country to have fair, honest elections. So why is it that we are dealing with this still at this day and age and all the abnormalities and irregularities as it relates to voting and disparities that exist with each different state? What you've seen is partisan politics, John, where you see people saying, okay, no, we're just going to certify this and put it through, even though there are votes that have been shown to be counted that are invalid. And then look at Pennsylvania just thumbing the nose at Justice Alito in the Supreme Court. This cannot go on. We have to resolve this now and not just turn a blind eye to it. For what reason? To have somebody in the White House, the most powerful position in the world, quite frankly, that didn't actually get the vote. It's very disturbing to me. All Americans should be disturbed by it. It's a bipartisan issue.
Well, like I said to my friends, we're playing for all the marbles in the world. I mean, it reminds me of the James Bond movie when James Bond was playing that guy with in a game, an electronics game, for all the marbles in the world. And I've said to my friends, look, give it time. We gave Al Gore and Senator Lieberman, we gave him till the middle of December. I said, by the middle of December, we'll know one way or another. You know, this week was the JFK assassination week, and to this day, nobody knows who really assassinated JFK. And we don't want to have an election like that, and we want people to be sure. So I said, let people go. Let's go through the process. Let's go through the process and find out what the truth is. Let the Supreme Court do their job. Let the Department of Justice do their job. Let the FBI do their job.
Let the process work itself out.
Yeah. Well, what I don't understand, Kimberly? The fact that Jeff Sessions was compromised somehow. He did nothing. And maybe the deep state had him for something. Maybe they had pictures of him with men or women or something. I don't know. But I don't understand why our current U.S. attorney in Durham has not come up with anything. Don't the American people deserve to know what the truth is before the election?
Oh, I totally agree. Why can't we get this resolved? We have the ability to know this. Why? I think we should declassify. John Jr. put a tweet out like that. We're tired of waiting. You know, what is Durham doing? I have tremendous respect for Bill Barr. I know people were concerned about, don't release stuff before the election. Well, what do you mean? Why wouldn't we want the people to vote exactly on the truth and the facts and uncover the corruption in the deep state? That is one of the reasons that President Trump got elected, John, as you know, is to, like, drain the swamp. Well, the swamp, as he says, has teeth, and it's outrageous what has been transpiring here. You know, I'm very sad for the American people who deserve the best, deserve to have the information, and, you know, instead we're getting this the runaround. Now, listen, justice delayed is not justice denied. I am hoping that this will just be, you know, come out even in the next couple of weeks, et cetera, because everyone wants to know. The world is watching. You know, we sit there and say that we want to know. We have transparency in other countries that have these issues, these banana republics. But guess what? Why can't we get this resolved? You know, why can't we hear the truth once and for all about what went down? Why is it, you know, we need investigations. And even into, like, Hunter Biden, forget the phony investigations that they made up, okay, about, you know, President Trump and Don Jr. and the whole family. There's actual corruption with the Biden family as it relates to China, as it relates to Russia, all of these things. It's outrageous to me that we still don't have some light shining on all of these things and who is specifically involved in the highest intelligence agency, really, in an attempt to overthrow a duly elected president, let alone spy on his campaign back in 2015 and 2016.
Kimberly, the American people just want the truth. And it seems like social media and the major networks and now even Fox are just telling them what they want to hear. And look, I started my life as a computer programmer. I know what could be done with computers. The allegations, if they're true, are truly very, very, very serious. And I don't understand why we haven't heard from the Attorney General or the FBI on it. Either they're investigating, and somebody has to investigate. I mean, it's not up to Sidney Powell to investigate. It should be the FBI should be standing next to her. If it's true, then this is monumental. But I don't understand why that's not happening. And maybe you have a better light on it.
You know, and this is the problem. I wish that, you know, because we're not in the, quote, administration, you know, Don Jr. and I, you know, are not, you know, privy to that stuff. And then also as it relates to these private investigations, we're hearing, quite frankly, John, the stuff that you are, oh, it's coming. It's coming. We've been hearing that for a long time. The American people are, you know, they've been patient and they've been true believers. But, you know, this is getting, to be too much. And it's wearisome. Like, it's like, why haven't we been able to get the information yet? What is taking so long? You're supposed to be uncovering the corruption, not, you know, holding it back. And I've had faith for so long, and I find that it's like I'm growing tired of it, to say, like, hey, where is it? We've been hearing this. And, you know, everybody has their sources and the people they talk to get the information about this, but I'm hearing the same thing across the board. Oh, any day now. Well, we've been hearing that for a while, quite frankly.
Well, I know the president. I know him for a long time. I know him longer than you're alive, almost. Young lady. And he's always been one tough individual, and I admire his toughness because he's been a CEO for all those years. But he's got to get the people around him to gather the truth where it's... that people could say, wow, that's true because the FBI said it or something.
Well, absolutely. And let me tell you something. If one thing you know, just like yourself, you know, President Trump, the whole family, you know, fighters, not giving up, and especially because he's not making it about him, he's saying it's about the American people. He's doing this out of love of country and love of people and for all those that showed up to support him. And I'm so sorry to tell you, I'm a common sense kind of gal, and I do not believe that more people voted for Joe Biden than Barack Obama. The whole thing is ridiculous. The guy got 12 people show up for him, and that's a Biden rally. You mean to tell me, like, all of a sudden, this year where we have all the mail-in ballots and an inability to be able to even verify signature on certain situations, like in Georgia and other states? To me, it's insane. Like, what do you have to hide? You're covering up. You won't let us see the ballots, the votes when they're being counted. You don't want to audit them. You don't want to check for the signature verifications because obviously you want to cheat. I mean, that's what this is about. It's about stealing votes, stealing liberty and democracy, and undermining our Constitution and the American people. And that's why President Trump is standing up for it, because he's not going to have it.
Well, the American people demand the truth, and I hope the truth comes out. Whatever the truth is, and we're willing to accept it as long as we know and have good feelings that everything has been investigated one way or another. And God bless America.
Absolutely. Yeah, God bless America. We're not asking for a specific outcome. We are asking for a thorough and fair investigation, and let the truth stand and fall where it is. That's it.
Win or lose, we just want the truth.
Well, that's the thing, you know, and then now people say, where do we go from here if they're able to get away with stealing the election? And, you know, there's a lot of talk with the president's a great patriot. And, yeah, I would not be surprised whatsoever if he puts his hat in the ring for 2024. All the polls show that he's the number one, you know, favorite choice for that position, and followed up by, like, Mike Pence, and a lot of nice things said about Don Jr. and Ivanka. But God bless, this is a whole movement across the country, a populist movement that supported the president. And these people are not going away. And, you know, Biden and the rest of them, the Democrats, are going to have to deal with the fact that there's, you know, just about 35 million Americans that, you know, voted that we even know about, that are feeling very frustrated and cheated out of this system and this process, that this was not an honest and just and fair, you know, election. And they're going to have to deal with that. And they're going to have to try to find a way, you know, to bring people in. One of the things I saw is that Biden is signaling by appointing his cabinet members, like his new NSA person, that a move away from America First policies. Can you imagine this? Away from America First policies. No, maybe that's actually a truthful statement, because now what is it going to be? China first? Because they certainly helped bankroll the Biden family. That's for sure.
Kimberly Guilfoyle, thank you. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Thank you for calling in and just giving a briefing to the American people. And we'll catch up again real soon.
Thank you, and God bless, and happy Thanksgiving to you and the whole Casamatidis family. And I'll give your regards to the president. We'll be seeing him for this weekend and the Thanksgiving holiday. So great to see you.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Kimberly.
All right, there goes Kimberly Guilfoyle and, of course, John Catsimatidis. John, she...
Well, that's an update.
She said a lot of things that I think the American people are thinking, though. Like, where have the authorities been in all these investigations?
I have no clue.
And we have the right to know.
We have the right to know. Win or lose, I don't care at this point. But I think we're entitled to the truth.
That's right. Well, speaking of truth, there was another tragic incident with the NYPD where two domestic violence officers showed up. And in kind of a fashion where they did not necessarily see the harm that was coming their way, they really found something that was very unpleasant. Both of them ended up injured. To give us an update on all of this is NYPD Chief Ruben Beltran of the Queens South Borough Commander Assistant, and he calls us in at this time. Chief, welcome back to Cats at Night with John Catsimatidis and Kevin McCullough.
Okay, thank you for having me. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great, Mr. Catsimatidis. Thank you for having me on.
Tell the old New Yorkers, what happened?
Well, we are counting our blessings here on Thanksgiving Eve. We had a domestic incident resulting from a home visit, which is pretty, you know, routine for us, and not that anything domestic violence related is routine, but in the confines of the 105 precinct at an incident that occurred at 145-86 179th Street yesterday afternoon, close to 1 o'clock p.m. But that incident actually had started the night before, where the victim, Ms. Gopi, Ms. Sharon Gopi, was assaulted by her husband, Rondell Gopi. That led to her coming to the precinct yesterday morning, around a little bit after 10 o'clock, and to make a complaint of that incident. And that resulted in our two of our experienced domestic violence officers, between Christopher Wells and Joseph Murphy, combined 20 years experience, responded to the house to continue that investigation of that assault. We're doing that investigation when the perpetrator, Mr. Gopi, really started firing, was armed with two handguns and was actually firing before he even walked back into the residence where the police officers were doing the investigation, leading to a gunfight, a gun exchange at very close quarters with the victim, also within the same room, and resulting in our two officers being shot and our perpetrator, also dying from his injuries.
Bring us up to speed. How are the officers doing?
Well, thank God. Like I said, we're counting our blessings. The officers, considering from the shots that the amount of shots that they took at that close distance, they both came out of surgery well yesterday. They're recovering from those injuries. Or we expect them to be released shortly. We're hoping and praying that it will be early enough for them to spend Thanksgiving with their families. But they're now in Jamaica Hospital, healing and recovering from those injuries and getting some much-needed rest. But they are expected to recover, and the injuries were non-life-threatening. Thank God.
At least I hope they have Thanksgiving weekend with their families.
Yeah.
You know, it's
Chief, talk to us about the unique challenges of being a domestic violence officer as opposed to, you know, a beat cop.
Well, the domestic violence investigation, the domestic violence response includes both beat cops and domestic violence officers, because police officers respond to those 911 calls. By the way, over 230,000 in New York City, NYPD responded to last year. It was almost 600 calls a day. But the domestic violence officers have the additional responsibility for following up on those initial calls. And as part of that following up on those initial calls, working with domestic violence investigators and the detective squads to make sure that we're stopping that cycle of violence within the home. So they're visiting the homes, the homes of the victims, they're making referrals to courts, they're providing counseling services and shelter alternatives, facilitating obtaining orders of protection, and also, you know, and making arrests if they're uh, if if there's crimes that were committed, and many domestic violence offenses are must arrest situations where police officers, if the perpetrator or the offender is there, we have to make the arrest.
Has COVID changed anything for the domestic violence crew?
Well, COVID has been very challenging for us. I mean, obviously, the 105 precinct, especially in Queens South, is a mostly residential community. So we have a lot of people that are home. They're home with their spouses. They're home with their children, and they've been kind of almost like a home imprisonment, a home confinement during that time frame. So like anything else, it's a very emotional environment where things can escalate, relatively quickly. COVID, I think, has probably intensified that somewhat. And even in the beginning, because of the contagiousness of COVID, we had a lot of police officers, over 5,000, over 6,000 now, I think, that have tested positive for COVID during that time frame. We were prioritizing which home visits we were mandating to be done, because a lot of people weren't letting us in into their homes because they were afraid of us, getting them sick. And also, also a lot of people, were sick. So we're glad that we at least got, as soon as we got it under control back in May and June, we really started going full tilt back into our domestic violence program, which is very important, because we need to get into those homes to identify those high propensity cases or the ones that have a high propensity for violence that we can prevent and try to save some lives and stop that cycle of violence.
Well, thank you, Chief, for coming on and giving us an update to all New Yorkers, because it was a little bit cloudy what actually happened, and I think you straightened out the situation.
And give our best to those officers.
Yes, and I hope they spend Thanksgiving weekends with their family.
Yeah.
Okay, we shall, and I urge all your listeners, to encourage them and to greet our police officers. They will be out there for Thanksgiving. I pray that they remain home and get home safely. But they'll be out there, doing God's work out there, trying to keep victims and trying to keep other people safe. So
New Yorkers are on the side of the NYPD.
Yeah, every day. Thank you, Chief. Appreciate it. We've still got another guest that's going to join us, John, before we're done. But I was thinking, as Chief Beltran was telling us there, that this is going to be a very different year for the holidays in general. If you're a big fan of New York City at the holiday season,
it's going to be a different year.
The parades are impacted. The stores are impacted. The entertainment's impacted.
Well, Curtis is on the phone, and he lives near where the parades used to be stationed, or they used to be stationed the balloons.
Yeah. Hey, Curtis, welcome back. You're on with John Katz-Matidis and Kevin McCullough.
Oh, I have the memories when my oldest son, Anthony, was growing up. We used to go out and watch the parade along Central Park West. And, in fact, I remember Anthony going down a balcony one time. I thought for sure my wife at the time was going to kill me. And guess who caught him at the bottom of the balcony? Brooke Shields, who said, "Curtis, is this how you handle your son?" Oh, I'll never
get
over that.
That's a good story.
That is a great story.
Yes. But don't
was, was it Anthony?
Yes, with Anthony. And Anthony had slipped and he fell. He was right on the railing, and Brooke Shields caught him right in her arms. And, oh, boy, she saved me quite the verbal tirade from my wife at the time, and she would have been right for screaming at me, because I was allowing Anthony to be a bit of a daredevil as the various balloons were coming down Central Park West. But obviously,
Are there any balloons this year?
No. The Museum of Natural History is where the families would show up late at night, and they would pump up the balloons, and it would be very festive. There's none of that because of coronavirus. And the parade tomorrow will be virtual, so you'll be able to watch it, but it's not real. It's a Fugazi parade. It's not what New York is.
Well, watch that Fugazi name, and he'll come back and haunt you.
Well, that's right. Hey, Bill Fugazi, who oftentimes would be at the New York Athletic Club,
hanging upside down,
have a huge meal.
Now, let me ask you, Curtis. I mean, this sounds like a sci-fi movie, the parade's not really there. We're watching it on virtual computer.
It's kind of like everything else, John. The whole year of 2020 isn't really there. It never happened. No. It's just an imaginary year in our memory.
How's the crime on the streets, Curtis? Any updates?
It's really horrible in the subways. I'll give you an example. Last night I was out on patrol with the Guardian Angels on the 2, 3, and 1 train, West Side trains. Within 3 hours, we came across 4 emotionally disturbed persons, 3 males, 1 female, all separate incidences, all of them out of control, all of them physically threatening passengers, homeless people, and they were a threat to themselves. And we had to stay with them. Eventually, police arrived. I think they were taking them to Bellevue. They weren't specific for a psychiatric examination. But this morning, as I was on my way up to WABC, I saw one of them at 86th Street on the B and the C train line just sitting there in the chair. So obviously they had been cut loose at night after their psych evaluation. They're everywhere in the subways. They're a danger to the passengers, a danger to the homeless, and ultimately a danger to themselves. And nobody's doing anything. There's no Thrive, Department of Homeless Services, no intervention. It's left to the police, and that's not what the police want to be dealing with, emotionally disturbed persons. They're not trained to deal with that. If they have to, they will. So we've tried to fill the void. We have 2-person teams out there, a man guardian angel and a female guardian angel who approach these people, try to get them the help that they need.
That's good. That's good work, Curtis. Hey, we started the show talking to Randy Maestro about the Lucerne incident. I'm just curious: does this just move the problem in your estimation, or are they getting an improvement in the situation for the city as a whole?
No, they're moving it down to Wall Street, and Wall Street already has 2 hotels that homeless and emotionally disturbed people have been moved into. One is the Marriott. One is the Daytop. It has destroyed the quality of life down there. We even patrol, Guardian Angels patrol, of all places, Wall Street on the weekends, where there are a number of condos that people live in, you know, year-round. Many of them have fled. Many of them have packed up and moved. And it's just moved all over the city, you know, from the tip of the Battery all the way up to Inwood and Washington Heights. This problem is everywhere. And you don't solve it by moving homeless or emotionally disturbed persons from hotel to hotel. That is not a solution. The mayor and the Department of Homeless Services have failed all of us, failed all citizens in not dealing with this problem.
Well, it's going to be something that sounds like it's going to be continuing if you've got now a population building up in what would be a third facility in the same neighborhood down there.
And see if eventually when the pandemic is over, the vaccines have been spread out, there's some herd immunity because of that, we get back to normalcy. Those men will never go back to the shelters that were set up for them originally, 90 of them in neighborhoods throughout the city, because they will have squatters' rights, they will have tenants' rights, and legal aid and other legal groups will go to court to enforce the law in tenant-landlord court. And anyone who's ever been in tenant-landlord court, once they go back to having normal hearings, will know that those homeless men and emotionally disturbed men will be in those hotels for a long, long time to come.
That is frightening. But, John, I don't even know that we're at a place where people can even conceive of New York being back to normal. I mean,
well, right now,
we were talking about the vacancies earlier.
People are still staying away.
Yeah.
And if you had kids in the subway system and they had to go to school in the subway system, would you allow them in the subway system?
Not right now.
Curtis, would you allow your kids in the subway system?
No, I have 3 boys. All of them can handle themselves. There's Anthony, there's Carter, and there's Hunter. No, I wouldn't. Even though, John, it is cleaner than it has ever been in our lifetime.
I do hear that, Curtis, a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, but fear is driving the bus.
Well, and you know what's you know, it's crazy about that, and we've all heard stories in the last few weeks of one of these individuals just shoving someone down on the train tracks. I mean, when there's no, it's one thing if someone's arguing, and Curtis, you guys happen upon it all the time. You see a fight breaking out because people have a disagreement. But to just be minding your own business and to have somebody who's just not mentally capable, and they're just throwing people into the train tracks. I mean, that is,
and that person's not going to go to jail.
And you don't. And
he's not.
You have no way
of
predicting.
And he's not going to go to the hospital. They'll be back on the train tracks again.
Yeah, that's crazy stuff.
It's a very, very sad situation. And you know, people are calling these people progressives. They're calling them liberals. But that's not the definition of liberal party. And we had Martin Hasno on last week.
Yeah.
And that's not the definition of progressives. They're not progressives. They are regressives. And they are taking New York City backwards. So, Curtis, the new name for these people are not progressives. They are regressives, taking New York backwards.
That's true.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I'll be out with Car 54 tonight. I'll report
Car
to you
54,
about...
where are you?
What's the hot spot tonight, Curtis? Where are you going to be?
It's up in Washington Heights, Inwood, 168th Street, on that great, iconic subway platform. Not only emotionally disturbed people, but junkies shooting up right in the open. And we got to keep them from falling into the tracks as they nod out. It's out of control, guys. It's out of control.
Yeah, well, thank you for loving your city enough to stand up and be counted and do something about it.
It's the least we can do. Remember, we're going to improve. We're not moving. We're going to fight for what we know is right, and we're going to save our city. We're going to save our city.
We've got to do it.
God bless New York. New York will make a comeback, Curtis, but we all have to team up together.
Well, and that's kind of a picture of what we've been doing on Wednesday nights lately. You've got the combined efforts of AM 970 The Answer, 770 WABC, and 107.1 FM WLIR. And we're having this, like, weekly town hall meeting, talking about the problems, and hopefully getting our next mayor elected, John Catsimatidis.
Well, we'll see.
He giggles as the show ends. Anyway, coming up Sunday, of course, John will be on all these stations with his Cats Roundtable. And have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll see you then.
God bless America.